I'm Keith MacArthur. Unlocking Bryson's Brain is a podcast about my son.
Hi, Brian.
The rare disease that keeps him from walking or talking.
I mean, Bryson's perfect, but his life is really hard.
And our family's search for a cure.
Oh my gosh, maybe science is ready for this.
It's part memoir, part medical mystery.
We can do just about anything.
Modifying DNA.
My heart and my throat.
Cure is controversial.
Unlocking Bryson's Brain. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
No, go in the top right over here. Ah! Can you do it?
You did so well.
Can I do some practice ones?
I gave people three tries.
Three tries?
I did. Because, it's hard. So I let them go three times. And
where you have to restart three times?
Yeah, you have to restart.
All right. Here, Kate, you go first. My heart's beating too fast.
Medical students and residents take all tests and challenges seriously, even kids' games like Operation. It's not what they're playing that I'm interested in, but where they're playing it.
Okay, go.
I'm Dr. Brian Goldman. This is White Coat Black Heart. We're at the Rural and Remote Medicine Conference at the Edmonton Convention Center. The conference has lectures and workshops on the challenges of practicing good medicine in austere parts of Canada. Here in the exhibits hall, at booths like this, they're meeting a different and no less difficult challenge, recruiting doctors to practice in those rural and remote places.
It's amazing.
Let's meet the recruiter who runs this booth.
Can you, just ad lib in a sentence or two, say, hi, my name is, tell us what you do, first and last name, and tell us what you do and where you do it.
Hi, my name is Cheryl Ganip, and I am a physician recruiter for Castlegar and District.
Cheryl Ganip is 10 years into the important job of recruiting physicians to Castlegar and surrounding area, the only recruiter to work in the district.
I've added a little challenge to the operation game as I've timed them, and we have a current winner, and people have to beat that time. So at the end of the conference, we'll see who's the winner, and they get a prize.
Who's the current winner right now?
The current winner is Denise at 1:55.
That seems really fast.
It's totally fast because the first person before her was 4:27.
Cheryl, the recruiter, gives White Coat producer Stephanie Dubois a tour of her booth in the exhibits hall. The game of Operation is not the only thing Cheryl does to entice young doctors.
Then we have a draw, and the draw is for a stethoscope. So I try to make it medical related, something they can carry in their suitcase home. It's not too big. And yeah, so there's that. And then we have a map, because a map is extremely important when you're pointing out where you are in the province. And we can talk about our relationship to Trail, which is our regional hospital, and how far we are from Kelowna, Vancouver, Calgary, things like that. And then I have the obligatory candy bowl. Everyone loves candies when they're going from booth to booth and session to session.
Cheryl, the recruiter, doesn't miss a trick. She can't afford to. Using the kids' game of Operation to lure would-be family physicians to Cheryl's booth seems kind of goofy. But the game of recruiting GPs has some serious stakes, especially in a place like Castlegar, a small city of nearly 10,000 souls for whom Cheryl does her recruiting. It's tucked into the southwest corner of the Kootenay Rockies, where the Columbia and Kootenay Rivers meet. The place is starkly beautiful and, like a lot of communities across BC, has a hard time recruiting and retaining family doctors.
The family doctor situation in Castlegar is a reoccurring rant at the lunch table. I always talk to my friends and family about it. I actually reached a point where I posted on social media just saying that I'm at a point of desperation here.
Candace Karras has good reason to be at a point of desperation. Candace is in her early 40s. She has a husband and young son, and she's lived in Castlegar for a decade. Her family doctor retired more than 3 years ago, and she needs a replacement. With a family history like Candace's, you can see why.
You know, as someone who lost both my parents by the time I was 22, both of them had very long, awful battles with cancer in their 40s. For years in the past, every time you go do your routine physical once a year, they say, oh, you speak about your history, and they say, yeah, for sure, that's something that we need to start screening for, but not till your 40s. Well, now I'm there, and it's like, I have no way to deal with this.
Cheryl, the recruiter, is trying to help people like Candace Karras deal with the need for a family physician, which is why I wanted to talk with Cheryl about how she recruits doctors and the lengths she goes to entice them to Castlegar. I spoke with her on the eve of the conference.
Cheryl Ganip, welcome to White Coat Black Art.
Thanks, Brian. I'm happy to be here.
Happy to be speaking with you too. You've been a physician recruiter for 10 years now. How much more competitive is it at this point compared to when you first started?
Oh, when I first started this, myself and a Creston community recruiter were the only community recruiters in all of BC as I knew it. Now, when you go to a conference, there is Recruiter Alley. There's a whole section of us. So it has become increasingly more competitive as the doctor shortage just grows.
So, you know, from your standpoint, the job is more competitive. How much more challenging is it now to successfully recruit a physician to a small community, say in a rural and remote part of British Columbia?
It's difficult. I mean, your community, your clinic, what you offer in the surrounding area has to tick absolutely every single box. Because if you don't, there is a community that will. So you have to not only tick those boxes, you also have to show that physician and their family that you tick those boxes. So it's a challenge to really know where they're also looking, because generally they are not only looking at your community when they're being recruited, they're looking at two or three. And we never knew that, but now it's just more people are vying for their time. So they are getting more emails from different communities than they ever were. And we just have to be more and more innovative in what we do and how we show up and where we show up. So it's highly competitive.
Tell me about being innovative. What's the most innovative thing you've ever done?
Well, right now I'm in a collaboration with a local coffee roaster who is doing a physician blend of coffee. And I'm going to do something creative around the coffee and a contest at the conference that's coming up. That's kind of fun and creative. I've also done things like, you know, when a family has come to our area, it was around Christmas time, and I decorated the yard, the house, the kids' rooms, all of those things, put up a Christmas tree, made it feel very much like home.
Wow, that's a lot of work. What, were you successful? Did you successfully recruit that physician?
We did. We did recruit that physician. Sadly, he's no longer with us, but he did stay for 4 years, 5 years. But Brian, we don't offer surf. He was from Australia, surfed every day and missed the surf. So sadly, he went back.
But you got him for 4 or 5 years.
Yes, yes.
Is that a success? Like, what's the outcome that's a complete success for you?
A complete success would be if they stayed, I don't know, 10 years. I mean, you want longevity for patients. You want longevity for the physicians who have been there a long time. But 5 years is a good, healthy length of time. I'd love it if they stayed for 15, right? But that doesn't always happen. But I'm happy with 5.
Where does this relationship begin? When does it begin in the lifetime, in the career of the person you're trying to recruit?
It begins in many different places. Sometimes it begins when students are in medical school. Sometimes it begins when they're in residency. Sometimes it begins when they're already into their career. So it begins in many different stages. And the farther out it is, the longer you have to follow those people and keep connected and ensure that you're top of mind for them and they know that you're still interested. So the recruitment process could really literally take years. it is not like other recruitment where you are trying to recruit someone in a 6-month period. That rarely happens. It happens sometimes, but it's rare.
I gather if you're starting in medical school, it could take many years.
Exactly.
How would you say that your approach to recruitment has changed over the last decade?
Well, 10 years ago, we worked pretty much in silos. But now we've decided that we need to take more of a regional approach, because having a doctor in one of our areas, maybe it's not Castlegar, but maybe it's Nelson or maybe it's Trail, benefits all of us.
Do you ever join forces with another recruiter and basically split the proceeds? Is that how it works?
Well, because we're all funded differently, you know, it's not the proceeds. We choose to support each other and make sure that that physician knows that they can come to Castlegar, they can come to Nelson, or they can come to Trail, and we will all do what we can to ensure that they're settled and happy. I think that we do share the profits in terms of stats. So if, say, I recruit a doctor, then the divisions of family practice, they become a member of the division of family practice, and they then take that stat as well. So we share in those type of profits.
How much research do you do on the would-be physician and their spouse to see whether this is the right kind of place for them?
That is probably the bulk of what you do when you have a candidate. You ask a lot of questions. You ask a lot of questions about their family, about their hobbies, about what type of schools they want. You do a lot of back and forth emails that way to get the information and take that information and kind of disseminate it into, okay, how does this fit into our community? Will they fit into our community? Will they be happy? You do a lot of research to ensure that you are the answer to whatever they're looking for. And if you're not that answer, they won't be happy. So it doesn't serve retention. So if it doesn't serve them and they move to another community, then they felt that that was a better fit for them. And that's okay. But that is part of the struggle with recruitment, I guess. You don't have control over the whole thing.
But just so that I understand the kind of economic model here, you would be paid for successful recruitment. It would be hard to be paid for retention unless it was, you know, maybe a fairly short-term period of retention, say a year or two or three. I mean, does anyone get paid if somebody stays for 10 years, you know, if they get paid more than if they stayed for 5 years?
Well, luckily, Brian, we don't work on that model. we work on a, you know, it's a consultancy fee, right? And so you do get paid for retention because you're doing activities that hopefully support retention. You're getting paid for activities like creating the conference kind of backdrop, the online presence, all of those things. So where does that stop and where does it start in terms of recruitment? We don't know. So you get paid not per recruit, but on the time you spend in the field doing the work.
And I gather if they stay, you know, whether you get paid for that or not, it's good for your reputation because that means it was a good fit and a good long-term fit.
Yes, definitely.
How many physicians have you personally brought to the community in the last 10 years? I'm just curious. I don't know how, I mean, it sounds like it's a very long effort. It can't be that many physicians unless you work 24 hours a day.
That's right. It isn't a big number. So when I say I personally brought, I can't say that because we are a team. I can't do the work that I do without Interior Health, because Interior Health is the employer. So often I can't do it without the divisions of family practice, because oftentimes the lead comes to them. And so I and the team have recruited 13 physicians in the time that I've been here, in the 10 years. And when it doesn't, like you said, it doesn't sound like a huge number, but when you're talking, sometimes it takes a year to recruit a physician, sometimes years. You know, I may never see the outcome of some of my recruits, right? But if you are recruiting one physician a year, you're doing very well.
Okay. One physician a year.
We'll be right back.
I'm Keith MacArthur. Unlocking Bryson's Brain is a podcast about my son.
Hi, Bryce.
The rare disease that keeps him from walking or talking.
I mean, Bryson's perfect, but his life is really hard.
And our family's search for a cure.
Oh my gosh, maybe science is ready for this.
It's part memoir, part medical mystery.
We can do just about anything.
Modifying DNA.
My heart and my throat.
Cure is controversial.
Unlocking Bryson's Brain. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Putting up Christmas decorations for a visiting doctor. Working with a local roaster to develop a physicians-only coffee blend. Cheryl is constantly thinking up new ways to entice MDs to move to Castlegar. And so is the city of Castlegar. In October 2023, the city announced it had signed a memorandum of understanding with a commercial building developer, a medical clinic management company, and local MDs to create a four-story building that mixes healthcare spaces with housing for doctors and their families. The aim is to help attract and retain physicians. You're listening to White Coat Black Heart. This week, a conversation with Cheryl Ganip, a physician recruiter who works in Castlegar in the Kootenai region of BC.
I think I grabbed it earlier.
Okay, perfect.
We caught up with Cheryl right before and during the Rural and Remote Medicine Conference at the Edmonton Convention Center. In the 10 years she's worked in the region, Cheryl has helped recruit some 13 physicians. Each one of them takes a year and often longer to get on board. Cheryl says conferences like the one where we met her are critical to making first contact. The compulsion to make good on each potential lead is enormous.
There's a lot of stress and pressure that go around conferences as well. I mean, they're long days and you're talking to people all day and you're hoping that, you know, you get someone at least interested in your area. And even when you do and you think, oh my goodness, like last conference, I thought this person I was talking to could have been the ambassador for Castlegar. And he was still in medical school, but he was so passionate about it. He had been to the area. He knew it, you know, went to the rural pre-med program. Then I got an email from him asking what I knew about working in the military. So I was like, that's a twist, a turn that I didn't expect. So there's lots of pressure, but I think I put more pressure on myself 10 years ago than I do now. I know it's a choice for them. And I know you have to have a camaraderie. You have to build trust. You have to do all those things in a time span of about 10 minutes, right? So how do you do that? And I, you know, like I said, I humor is a good way.
But you're talking about 10 minutes to make your pitch to get them to the point where they might be interested enough to talk to one of the physicians who was successfully recruited.
Exactly.
And you use humor.
A lot of times we do. Yeah. And I think because it's a nervous kind of, you know, time for both people and you just want to break that tension.
You may not want to go into a lot of personal details, but tell me about the effort that was required to recruit the last one.
So our last one, I was at a conference in Halifax and I, you know, doing my thing, someone walked by and said, oh, Castlegar. We're not interested in Castlegar, but our colleague is. Can we take your information? I said, sure. So I provided them the information and I wasn't even done the conference, I don't think. And I got an email from her. And when you get an email from a physician contacting you, you know it's a great lead. So I found out that she was actually from the area originally. She was practicing in Manitoba, wanted to come back, but couldn't come back for a year or longer because she had a return of service to do there. We stayed in touch. I just kept, you know, connecting with her and asking her if she had any questions. And it was an easier process just because she knew the community. I didn't have to explain the community to her. I didn't have to, you know, provide her with any links about the community. She knew the community. Her family was from the community. What I didn't know, though, is she never had any connections to daycares or things like that because she'd been out of the community for so long and none of her family needed daycares. So when she decided she was going to make that move, there were no daycares available. So I had to go to the daycares personally and plead that they would, you know, for an opening and put her on a list. And, you know, I just kept following up with them and following up with them. And then I set an appointment with her to talk to all the daycares and connected her with the school because she wanted to be in an immersion program. That was probably one of the easier recruits. She's now in the community. She bought her parents' home. They renovated it. She's there to stay. She still goes back to Manitoba to do her return of service on, you know, a block basis, but she's very much part of our physician group. And we felt that that was just such a feather in our cap.
So you put a lot of effort into this one would-be recruit, and so far it's successful. Have you ever had anybody who pulled out at the last minute after all that work?
Yes. Early on in my career, this, you know, and I was very new to physician recruiting at the time. So I wasn't used to the whole site visit, the whole, you know, red carpet layout. So I did what I thought would interest physicians. I asked a lot of questions and, you know, set up site visits accordingly. So there's a physician who, you know, we took hiking, kayaking, physician dinners. We put out a great amount of effort, and we thought, yes, she's totally interested. She'd be a great fit. And then we got an email saying that she had chosen to go to Quebec or something because of a partner, da da da. And so I was just like, oh my goodness. I mean, in the beginning, you take it personally. You think, what did I do? What could we have done differently? But now I know that sometimes it just doesn't work out. And it's not anything you could have done differently, but it didn't tick the boxes for them, or, you know, that they just, maybe they had a great time at your site visit, but for whatever reason, maybe their partner didn't want to settle down there. So that's out of your control, but it is disappointing.
Is it just the cost of doing business, or have you learned over the years ways to kind of screen that out and make it less likely to happen?
There are definitely ways to screen that out. But at the same time, physicians sometimes are under pressure because they're holding up the whole structure. So they want sometimes anyone, right? And it's hard to say, no, they won't fit. So it's a difficult balance. And I find it, you know, like I said, it's different than other types of recruiting.
Does your job end once a physician is up and working in your community?
No. No, definitely not. And that's the other thing that's very different. You have touch points with their spouse, with them, first on a, you know, maybe a couple of weeks in, maybe a month. You just keep touching base until you feel like, okay, they've integrated into the community. Right. So it does not stop when they've signed that contract. Not at all.
Last question I wanted to ask you, you know, you have a job to do and it sounds like you're passionate about it. At the same time, we're dealing with this huge problem of a lack of primary care providers in this country. And I wanted to ask how much pressure you feel personally to bring physicians to Castlegar.
There's a great deal of pressure. I feel it not only for our community, but I feel it mostly for our physicians, who I know are just swamped. And so when I think of them, I feel a tremendous amount of pressure and wanting to relieve that pressure for them. In the recruiting role, you are very much working alone. This is not a job that you go into an office with a team of recruiters and you're having a team meeting or anything like that. And so you need to be able to
be up all the time. You need to not take things too personally. And you need to be able to have fun to relieve some of that pressure, because it is a high pressure job. Whether we get a physician or not means the difference of one of our physicians maybe suffering burnout. So a difficult position to be in, for sure.
Do you want me to scan your card as well?
Yeah.
Producer Stephanie Dubois stayed until the end of the conference to find out how many leads Cheryl scored on the conference's Whova event app.
Well, according to the Whova app, I have 37 leads. However, out of those 37 leads, I probably have two hot leads. And the hot leads mean basically they will be coming to Locum for us. So while I didn't sign a doctor on the dotted line, I'm still thrilled with the results, simply because those locums will actually get us through our ER summer gap that otherwise may look like perhaps the ER being in a bit of a dire straits this summer. So I think mission accomplished.
Cheryl says she snagged a bunch of leads and two doctors who want to do locums or temporary stints in Castlegar. Good for the time being, even if they don't decide to stay permanently. Given the growing shortage of primary care providers in the Kootenays and the rest of BC, Cheryl the recruiter is in it for the long haul. That's our show this week. If you'd like to comment, our email address is whitecoat@cbc.ca. Whitecoat Black Art was produced this week by Stephanie Dubois with help from Jennifer Warren and Samir Chabra. Check out Stephanie's digital article at cbc.ca/whitecoat. Our digital producer is Ruby Buiza, and our senior producer is Colleen Ross. And just a note about an upcoming event we're having called White Coat Black Art Book Talk. It's at the Hamilton Central Library in Hamilton, Ontario on Saturday, May 25th. It'll be a lively discussion with well-known health personalities about the health and wellness books that have made a difference to their physical and mental well-being. And it's a chance for you to share a book and personal story as well. Tickets are free, but you have to register to attend. Head to cbcwhitecoat.eventbrite.ca or go to our website. That's medicine from my side of the gurney. I'm Brian Goldman. See you next week.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.